Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This morning, because it's Friday, we're going to do a recap on the things we talked about this week. And I want to put a mention out there for all of you who have supported my daughter-in-law on Facebook and actually have helped for the last several months with all the things that are going on in our family in regard to the health of my husband, my son, and now my daughter-in-law. We seem to be on a medical roll. My daughter-in-law has been in and out of the hospital now since actually we are going into like the 11th day. This Monday will be 2 weeks ago since she had surgery. And now she is back in the hospital. And it led me to thinking that we should discuss some things, and we're going to do this on Monday. But I'm going to give everybody a little food for thought. How do you feel about the fact that it cost thousands of dollars to get an education for a certain profession? A few thousand dollars to become a nursing assistant, several thousand dollars to become a nurse, a little bit more money to become a doctor's assistant. And then, of course, you get into the field of doctors. And doctors, we have everything from a GP, a general practitioner, all the way up to the world's famous cardiologists, oncologists, vascular surgeons, people that are changing the world on a daily basis. They even sometimes get involved in the science of medical arenas and get involved in the innovations of equipment and mechanical devices to help us when we are in a place where maybe we've got cancer, maybe we've got a blood disease, maybe we need serious surgery. The surgery that was just done to my husband, I thought, was amazing. They made two little tiny cuts in his groin and went up with wires with a television screen and put a stent in the middle of his aorta. Your aorta is like your the main stem in your blood tree in your body. Amazing stuff, right? Amazing. My grandparents would be like, you did what? They did what? So it's come a very, very long way. Well, the reason I'm bringing all this up is because all of a sudden we think all these people that have gotten all this knowledge, all this education, spent all this money to go to the best colleges, the best medical schools, the best whatever, police academies, that's even in this realm, nursing schools, teachers. What about teachers? Teachers spend a good amount of money to become a teacher and spend a good amount of time in a school and learning about being a teacher. And all of a sudden, we have this thing going on. Let's go to security. Before I get into the big realm, because we're not going to discuss this all morning. I'm just giving out food for thought so people can think about this, and maybe either Facebook me if you want to talk about something in particular, or call on the phone and talk with us about this on Monday morning. And that is the fact that we get laymen, people with no training. Let's talk about poor George Zimmerman. Did he do a bad thing? Of course he did. He took the life of a teenager. Did he do it on purpose? I guess probably we'll never, ever know the true psyche of George Zimmerman, nor do I care to know. However, they put him in a position to make a judgment call on somebody else's life. Now, who's really to blame there? Think about that, everybody. Think about that. Now let's move to teachers. I can't even think of what they're called. They're called, I have people tell me this all the time, a substitute teacher who really isn't a real teacher. Might be a mom, might be somebody who thought about being a teacher. Sometimes it's somebody who's had a little bit of education in the realm of teaching, but not always. They're there to kind of babysit the kids if the teacher can't be there. I understand the problem. I understand that was one of the solutions. I get that. But are they really trained to be a teacher? What if during that day that they spend time with that classroom of second graders, they say something that is totally inappropriate? And all the kids pick right up on it, and here you got something you got to straighten out. Why? Because this person, who's good enough to come in and babysit the kids, opens up a realm that they're really not trained in or educated in. Then let's go to the medical field. You have nursing assistants. You have nurses' aides. You have a whole realm of people who spend a few hundred dollars to take a 6 weeks course, a 4 week course, whatever it is, to learn about being a caregiver. Awesome. So many people, especially elderly, especially the chronically ill, even children that will never, ever be able to take care of themselves. Nurses' aides and caregivers are incredibly important to give moms a break, to give dads a break, to be there. However, are they the people that you want to change your wound dressing? If you've got a horrible, horrible incision, or you had a major, major surgery? Well, I happen to know for a fact that there are some cases when they expect you to do that for yourself. This is, something's gone awry. Something's wrong here. If we need to pay that $100, $200 for a visit with a doctor who spends 15 minutes with you, if he spends that long with you, then how is it all right for a caregiver to take care of what's wrong with you? Do you see the problem there? Do you see the disconnect there? Let's talk about this on Monday. Let's make sure that we understand that there are certain fields out there, professional fields, that need to be monitored by the people that were trained to do it, not by somebody who kind of sort of got trained, not handed down to the person that's supposed to be able to make your bed, empty your bedpan, and fluff your pillow. They shouldn't be taking care of you. The person that got the education to take care of you is the one that should be taking care of you, right? Okay, so that's my point. I'm going to bring Shelly in, and we're going to, she might have a little something to say about this particular topic. But like I said, we're going to talk about this Monday. I just wanted to give everybody some food for thought. Good morning, Shelly.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you? Do I sound like I'm on a soapbox this morning?
Yes, actually do. It's quite entertaining. I've been on the receiving end of this many times before.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it because you're always pretty much on target, and you're usually reacting to something, you know, in the same way.
Yes.
You know, so we take turns getting up on the soapbox.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there are some things, and I think they happen as a course, not as something that's done with intent. I think it kind of like gets a little bit away from you and then makes its own path. And I think we need to talk about it, and we need to figure out what we can do to stop this, because this isn't the way it was set up to do. A doctor is supposed to take care of you when you're sick, not
right,
the lady
right.
that makes your bed. And
right.
a doctor, as well as a policeman, is supposed to carry a gun and keep the streets safe, not a neighborhood watch guy.
And,
you know,
and
I mean,
said, we'll discuss that on Monday, but I definitely have a couple things to say about that. The only point I'll make right now before we continue is that in any job, not even jobs that are as critical as the one you're talking about in the medical or law enforcement, but in any job, that's part of the problems, and this is something I talked about once before, is that people are getting delegated instructions to do certain tasks that don't have the experience or the knowledge on how to do it properly, and that's why a lot of times things end up going wrong at companies because they get too big, and the people that used to handle 20 things that have moved up now and train other people don't train them completely. So all of a sudden you start having all these things that start falling through the cracks because when this person took it over, they didn't know to do it. The same principle with what you're talking about, where people are being put in responsible positions that aren't fully trained to really understand how to handle them, either from a technical standpoint or from an emotional standpoint, make an emergency judgment in the right way. They don't have that training.
Exactly. And so many people on an entry level are good, caring, honest, hardworking people. And they do things because they think there's nobody else there to do it. I know because I've been in that place. And it's not always a good place to be. And it is very, very easy to make a poor decision. So we will talk about that Monday. But for today, I want to recap. And, of course, on Monday, we talked at length about sleep apnea. And I thought it was very interesting because I suspect, I never read any statistics or percentages or anything like that because they probably can't do that because they can only test the people that think maybe something's wrong or put themselves in a position for everybody to find out that that indeed is the problem. And as the articles that I read said, you can only truly be checked for sleep apnea if you go to a sleep clinic and actually have your sleep monitored. Now, if you are lucky enough to sleep with somebody, then they maybe can say, yeah. But, you know, this week in the hospital with Mike and Valerie, the doctor or the nurse, I don't remember who it was, looked at Valerie and said, do you have sleep apnea? And she said, no. And then she said, well, do you snore? And Valerie looked at Mike, and Mike said, yeah, she snores, she snores. And the nurse said, well, does she stop breathing? And Mike got this real confused look on his face, like, well, she's here, isn't she? I mean, you know, I think he thought, what kind of question is that? Does she stop breathing? And Mike said, no, she doesn't stop breathing. But I thought to myself, that whole interview right there was ridiculous. Because, first of all, she didn't explain to Mike why she said, does she stop breathing? She didn't say, you know, is there like a lapse in her breathing? Like, does she wake you up when she's snoring real loud and then you listen and you don't hear her breathing at all and you wait to hear her take another breath, like what happened to me with my girlfriend Pat? She never said any of that stuff. She just said to Mike, does she stop breathing? And Mike looked at her kind of like, what the shit? What are you talking about? Of course she doesn't stop breathing. She's still here, isn't she? That's where his mind was at. I could see it on his face. So, again, a true diagnosis of whether or not she's got sleep apnea was never made. And yet, they were asking her about sleep apnea because they were going to sedate her.
Wow.
And being sedated when you have severe sleep apnea is not always a great idea. You see what I'm?
That's one of the problems. You're telling me that this nurse was interviewing him and that he made an obvious facial expression like, what are you talking about? And she didn't even pick up on it. She didn't even realize that he confused him and that he didn't even understand. You know, how can you run with the answer to your question when it's obvious the person didn't even understand the question to begin with?
Because you don't want to take the time to delve any further. And that's what I see on a constant and chronic, and this is why we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about on Monday. So before I get on that soapbox again, I'm going to stop. But I want to say that sleep apnea, if you do have sleep apnea can be just as dangerous as anything else. If there is a time when you are sleeping soundly and your breathing shuts off because of sleep apnea, then you need to go and have it checked. And again, the warning signals were headaches, sleepiness during the day, severe sleepiness during the day, and restlessness. And when you sleep at night, if you wake up and you feel, like almost like sick feeling, chances are you're not breathing good. And there were a few things that they talked about that might help, you know, like a humidifier in the room and things like that. And I do know that they help some people, and I do know that they can make you more comfortable at night when you're sleeping. But if you're having trouble with your sleep and you wake up with a bad headache in the morning, and by 10 o'clock, maybe 11 o'clock, if you're an early riser, you get up at 6, you get ready to go to work, and 3 hours later, after you calm down again, you know, you're rushing around to get to work, take your shower, do this, da-da-da-da, get in the car, get to work, do all this kind of stuff, check your messages when you get to your desk, or have your first onslaught of people that you wait on, or whatever the case might be, and then when things slow down again, you are unbelievably sleepy. Chances are you need to go and talk to the doctor and let the doctor have you examined or tested for sleep apnea. It's nothing to mess with, and it's certainly not a healthy place to be. Everybody, I hope, understands that it's not conducive to your good health if you're not sleeping properly, and it's certainly not conducive to your bloodstream, to your electrical system, if you have moments when you don't breathe at all. Not good. So pay attention to things like that. Shell, have you got anything to add about the sleep apnea talk that we had on Monday?
Well, the only thing I would add is that there are many treatments for sleep apnea where someone can actually either reduce their need or sidestep the need for the machine that you have to wear. I know some people who really struggle with even wearing that apparatus. For people where the sleep apnea is being caused by some other condition like diabetes or overweight, there are certain things, and it doesn't mean you have to go on a crash diet, but there are certain things that will help that condition, help the diabetes or the overweight situation, bring both those down, such as just altering your diet before you go to bed, a couple hours before you go to bed, make sure you don't eat certain things. We had talked about that earlier in the week on, certain foods that can actually, exacerbate that problem, make it worse, So diet, being aware of that, making sure that a couple hours before you go to bed, you're doing things that are assisting the body in sleeping without interruption. I had mentioned about my ex-husband who was already on a sleep apnea machine. He had gained over 200 pounds, and he had gone on a what's called the HCG diet. You can get it in many forms, but he did it in the drop form. And within a couple of weeks, he started noticing that he wasn't needing the machine so much. Now, he lost a tremendous amount of weight. He lost 25 pounds in 2 weeks, but you have to understand how overweight he was. And the larger you are, the faster you lose on this diet. And his breathing normalized. He started, he was not waking up with the headaches anymore, things like that, because even with the machine, he really, really struggled with the machine. He didn't like using it. But he had to. So he was thrilled to see that there was this shift literally in a very short amount of time. So that's the only thing.
Well, there was a bit of discussion about the discomfort and the different kinds of CPACs and things like that that you can use, and that, again, this is another one of those situations that we're going to talk about Monday. You have to go to the right place, the right person, to get the right information. And I mentioned this yesterday on the show, and I'm going to start saying it on a regular basis because I do not want anybody to think that Shelley and I think that we have all the answers. We do not. We discuss things that bother us discuss things that we see by other people, so that they're out there for people to think about and find the right answers that pertain to them. It's not about us trying to tell you what to do, because I have enough people to tell what to do, quite frankly. And it's not about that for me, but it is about letting people know that if you're struggling with something, like waking up in the morning with bad headaches and wondering what's wrong with you and wondering why you're not sleeping well, and even if you're just taking melatonin, which is a very mild sedative that's more natural and things like that, but if you're taking a pain reliever with a PM in it, a lot of times these are not the answer, because if you're not breathing once in a while, do you see the sequence of events there? If you sedate yourself too much, that's not so great if you're having...
Right.
If you're struggling with sleep apnea and don't know it. So analyze what's going on with you personally, and take an interest in what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And like Shelley said, a lot of times, milk, we talked about this with the cancer information that we shared this week, and we're going to touch on that as well again. But milk at night, dairy products at night, are not good for somebody who's struggling with their breathing. And if you've been diagnosed at some point in time with some kind of asthmatic problem or sinus issues, post-nasal drips, all those kind of things add into how well you breathe. And you know what's very interesting for people to do, and I don't know if anybody or if everybody has thought about it and done it, but you know how when you're in a doctor's office, they have these amazing diagrams of the human body? If and when you have an opportunity, and if and when you're concerned about the way your body is acting or reacting or behaving or anything, and you're over 45 and you're starting to struggle with the daily things like getting your butt out of bed and walking up the stairs at work and things like that, get on the computer and research the human body and get a little bit of understanding about how your human body is working and the functionality of all the different things that are in our bodies. It's very, very interesting, even to a lay person. But again, it's your body, and it's going to be different from everybody else's. But if you don't have a clue when something is going on, today we have all that kind of information at our fingertips. When I was a kid, if you wanted to look at a diagram of a human body, it was hard to find. I remember in science class, the teacher shared with us that he was trying to find the diagrams like they use in medical school to teach us about the blood flow and how the heart pumps and the ventricles and the arteries and all this kind of stuff. He was trying to explain some of this to us, and he couldn't find a suitable diagram to teach us kids. Well, now they're everywhere for you to look at. So be smart. It's your body. You're the only one who owns it, and it's good for you to know how things are functioning, and not to analyze yourself, not to doctor yourself, not to, you know, represent yourself in your own major surgery. Don't miss my point here. But understanding when a doctor talks to you about something, that you are a little bit enlightened about what the hell he's talking about. It's good for you, good for them, because then you make a smarter buyer, just like your car. You research all the cars if you're going to buy a new car, but you have a tendency to not even think about how your own body is acting. So, again, I think that's a great idea. I started doing that a while back when I realized that I could find all that stuff on the computer, and I've always had an interest in that kind of stuff anyway. So it's smart for you to research and find out what the deal is. But sleep apnea is nothing to mess with. So if you think you're struggling with some kind of sleep disorder or breathing disorder, you need to find out what it is. And you need to go to the proper sources and figure out what's going on with you, because it can be dangerous. And don't don't sedate yourself if you suspect that that's what's going on with you, because that's not the right thing to do. Anything else, Shel, that you can think of about sleep apnea? Uh-oh. I think I lost her again.
Can you see?
Now I gotcha.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, hang on a second. My phone's acting up a little bit. Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, all right, sorry about that.
That's all right.
Yeah, well, I think we covered everything right now with regard to sleep apnea, but I do like what you said a few minutes ago about the fact that what you and I are trying to do is just basically familiarize people and inform them of the things that you and I have either benefited from ourselves or that we've seen people firsthand, all right, that have benefited from what we talk about. You know, we're not doctors. We make that very clear. We're not giving people medical advice. And anybody that has any kind of a medical condition or suspects that they may be struggling with a particular disorder like sleep apnea, you know, we always recommend, you know, see your doctor, get your doctor's recommendation.
I'm losing you again, Shel. Yeah, you're talking in shorthand, so I don't know where you are right now, but you got to turn your phone around again. Okay, so I think Shelley is just reiterating everything I just said. She's talking about the fact that it's a good idea to get some medical advice if you think that you're having trouble with any of these kind of things. You've got to figure out what's going on with yourself and get the kind of help that you need. Don't self-medicate and don't do things that may not serve what's really going on. In order to treat anything, you have to know what it is. In order to fight a foe, you have to know the foe's name, right?
So, right.
There we go. So I've got you back now. So
And you kind of got my point. You know, what I was saying is that sometimes a natural or holistic approach can either make the medical approach work more thoroughly without so much side effects, or can actually reduce the need for the intensity of the medical option, and in some cases can eventually replace it. So it just makes sense to kind of search all your options out, and then people have to make decisions for what they feel comfortable with and what makes sense to them. But just understand that there are other options out there, and it's a process. You know, like you said, educate yourself. You know, everybody that I know today that gets into this realm, you know, you don't have to become a scholar. You don't have to get a PhD in a particular topic. But just like you said, on the internet, there's like so much information. Google it. Read a few articles. Get more of an understanding of what you're dealing with and what all the options are. Because understand that doctors are taught medical options. Sometimes there are other options that may benefit you. Read them. Talk to as many people as you can that may have the same situation. And then go with what your gut tells you. Listen to your gut. You'll have a sense of which one is right for you.
That's right. And I think that's advice that people can follow in almost every realm. In a session last week with somebody who I was counseling, they said to me, well, you don't understand. You know, if I don't have somebody, you know, around me to help me and to make sure that I'm doing everything right, and I'm the only one that's there. And I said, you mean the only one who really cares? And he looked at me real funny, and he goes, yeah, I guess so. And I said, well, does that make sense to you, that you're depending on people that don't, you know, that don't have anything vested in you? You're the only one with anything vested in you, really. I mean, we all have people who love us and care about us, and we certainly felt that way about our parents. Most of us were lucky enough to feel that way about our parents. But at the end of the day, if you're a grown-up, the only one with anything vested in how you are, who you are, and what you are is you. That's it.
Right.
So, okay, so let's move in to our cancer discussion, which I got a lot of feedback on this week. I was happy to see how many people are understanding more and more every day about what's right for us and what's wrong for us. And obviously, if you can put yourself in a better place without the deadliness of chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, all the other things that are available to people out there, then doesn't it make sense that that's what you do? We talked at length about the harm of all those modalities that they treat cancer with, and we know that cancer is a very, very persistent, very dangerous entity. It's one of the most dangerous killers out there, cancer. It makes Ted Bundy look like a cakewalk, and we all get that. So, but again, some of the remedies for cancer, such as chemotherapy and radiation, are like sending in Al Capone to take care of a serial killer. It's about making better choices that aren't quite so drastic. So in the very beginning of finding out you are in a struggle with something like cancer, you need to really evaluate what you're doing, first of all, to get yourself in a better place health-wise. We spend a lot of time talking about the side effects of cancer treatments. And even though we have great respect for them, because some very wonderful men and women spent hours, days, months, years coming up with all of these amazing treatments and all this amazing technology, we get all that. But on the same token, we understand that part of fighting cancer is your responsibility. And one of the most important things that we talked about is your attitude when you're going through it. But being able to evaluate what a doctor wants to do to you and make a decision on what you think is best for you, again, should only be in your realm, nobody else's. Discussing it with somebody else, talking it over with somebody else, we all think is important. We all think that it's really important to talk when you're struggling with anything. That's the whole idea of this show. But on the same token, you have to be educated about what you're doing. You have to understand. And just like I said a few minutes ago, if you can figure out how to get some knowledge about your own body, you should be doing it. You should be understanding what makes you tick, what makes you thrive, what makes you healthier. And a lot of times, like Shelley just said, it's all about your consumption. It's all about what you put in your body. It's all about how you treat yourself, how you worry, how you don't worry, how you handle day-to-day life. And if you do have to turn to some of the amazing technology that we have today, then you have to. But part of being able to withstand some of those treatments is getting yourself in a better place to begin with. I hope everybody gets that. I hope everybody understands the worth of before you put something in your body that technically is poisonous to kill the cancer, you have to be in a healthy place. I hope everybody gets that. You think we made that clear enough, Shel?
Yes. One of the things we didn't discuss with regard to cancer, and I think this affects cancer more than other illnesses, is fear. One of the things that I saw happen when I worked at the Institute a lot is that there were people that didn't want to do chemotherapy. They were actually afraid of it because, like me and like you, they had seen loved ones and friends, you know, friends and family that did the chemo and then started declining rapidly as a result of what the chemo does to the body. All right, so they were afraid of the chemo and radiation and wanted to do something more holistic in lifestyle, but their families and friends didn't understand, you know, that whole realm, didn't understand lifestyle changes, didn't understand alkalizing the body, and were very, very aggressive with the individual who was, who in fact was suffering with the cancer. And so they made decisions that they were not comfortable with, and they did the chemo. Or in some cases, they really believed that they should be doing chemo. They were actually fine with that and were actually pushed in the other direction to come to the Institute and were really there against their will. Either case is just as catastrophic. If you really believe in your heart of hearts that chemo is the answer and you're not afraid of it, and you do not believe, in, as much as you and I do, if you're a person who doesn't believe in lifestyle choice changes and you believe that, that chemo is going to save your life, what's going to happen if you were to come to the Institute or to do something lifestyle, okay, it wouldn't work for you because your mindset would sabotage it because you would live in fear. You would be there doing that, and in the back of your mind, you would be saying, this isn't going to work, this isn't going to work, I should be doing this other thing. Same thing where if you did the chemo and you were afraid of it and felt you should be doing something different, again, it's not going to enhance the health of your body. And we've seen this play out hundreds and hundreds of times. You have to live a life that's congruent. If you feel a particular way, and this is something that, that I see with a lot of people, okay, listen to your gut. This is your body, all right? I've done many, many things in my life that everybody in my life thought was nutty and stupid. When I became a vegetarian, I actually had some people that got angry with me. I'm not kidding. I had some family and friends that got angry with me. They thought it was the stupidest thing they ever heard of. Now look how many vegetarians and vegans there are, but this was over 15 years ago. It wasn't as common then. And I had some people that actually were pretty animated in their disapproval of my choice. It sounds stupid, but it did happen. And but instead of going back to being meat eater, I already knew that that was the right choice because I felt comfortable with it. So I had to kind of like turn a deaf ear to that and just listen to my own gut. So that's one of the things, especially with cancer, one of the things that prevents people in doing more research is because they listen too much to family and friends, and people can be very, very opinionated. They're either very, very opinionated about chemotherapy or they're very, very opinionated about lifestyle changes. The bottom line is it's your body, and for any issue that you may be dealing with in life, but more so with cancer because more fear comes in with cancer, okay, you have to listen to yourself. Educate yourself enough on the different options so that when you make the choice, regardless of which choice it is, when you make the choice or the choices, because you could always marry medical and lifestyle, all right, make sure that it makes sense to you, that you understand what the choices are and that you're making the choice, that you're not making the choice to satisfy friends and family so that they don't disapprove of your choice. You need to be okay with your choice. And I think that's probably a piece of the puzzle that we didn't deal with the other day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, loved ones are, of course, are a big part of our life. And I think in a lot of cases, old injuries, old incidences and things like that, or things that other people have seen, they get scared. And like you said, fear, you know, it very often runs us. And
yep.
I think that still, I'm a believer in talking through things, though, just like what we're doing right now. Shelley and I often have a difference of opinion, often,
mm-hmm.
through the years that we've known each other. We don't always agree on everything by a long shot, but many times, because we discuss something, she'll convince me that something that she's been telling me for a very long time may be right, and vice versa. So
yeah.
It's okay to discuss, you know, with the people that care about you. I think that that's a plus, that you have that available to you and you can say, you know, to your brother or your sister or your spouse or your best friend, you know, this is what's going on with me, so that you can put it out there and discuss it. And it would be not in keeping with everything I say if I didn't tell you that I think that that's important, to be able to talk to somebody and to work out something like that that's going on with you. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that they always have the right answers. It's an opportunity to discuss and evaluate what you're thinking, what they're telling you, the advice they're giving you, and make an assessment then. But you always have to do, like Shelley just said, you always have to go with something that you're comfortable with. If you walk into an institute, if you walk, say you don't have cancer. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that you have a major addiction. And a lot of that out there today, a lot of that. We've had many shows about addictions, about drugs, about alcohol, about food, many addictions that are out there. So say you convince yourself that you need, and family members say to you, you know, we're worried about you, you need to get into a rehab. So you go to the rehab, or maybe it's court-ordered. This is another scenario. It's court-ordered, or your parents, if you're a young person, or your spouse says, I'm out of here unless you get some help. Okay. So you go into a rehab, and you don't, somewhere inside of you, you don't believe you have a problem. Somewhere, even though it's blatant, even though it's right in your face, you know, we all live, when it comes to judging ourselves, we all live in a state of denial. On a very, very prevalent basis. A lot of times we cannot believe, if you're thinking about it and you know that it exists, you're aware of it. So where's the problem? The problem is the problem itself, right? You are either using drugs on a regular basis, which, I mean, in any circle, people will look at you and say, you're doing what? You know, that's not okay. I know a lot of young people have themselves convinced that if they smoke a couple joints a day, that there's no harm in that. Absolutely no harm in that. No matter how many things they've been shown in school, no matter how many times, and some of them have been to rehab before and been shown all the writings and the proven statistics about marijuana. But then you have these cutting-edge people who are saying, well, medical marijuana, you know, I mean, it's the only thing that gets me so I can sleep, or it's the only thing that helps my my eyesight, or it's the only thing that keeps my angst at bay so I don't have to take Xanax. Well, that could be true. You can't argue with somebody when they really believe something anyway. So that could be true. But the fact of the matter is, anything that you take into your body, that you ingest into your body, that changes who you are, is addictive, habit-forming, and probably isn't good for you, because you're not supposed to change who you are. You're supposed to be who you are.
That's right.
And when I listen to these young people and I look at them and I want to support them and I want to believe that they believe and that they're going to be okay. You know, I mean, that my first instinct is, well, yeah, they seem to be handling it. I you know, they're probably going to be all right. But really, if I dig deep into the mom shelf, I know that's probably not true.
Right.
But I can't do a damn thing. I can't do anything until they make the decision to do something.
Right. They have to become concerned by what they hear and read about what marijuana actually does to the brain and things like that. A lot of people don't realize what it does to the brain sheets of the nerves. And when I did that whole study on addictionology, I never did pot and, you know, things like that, you know, but I used to know people that had terrible, terrible problems with their memory and focus that were potheads. And it's like, and they didn't even realize it. That was one of the issues with me and my ex-husband. He did pot for a long time. I didn't know about it. He didn't do it in front of me. He didn't do it at home. And he stopped for a while at my request, and I noticed a tremendous improvement in his memory. And then all of a sudden, he started getting a little not so good with that anymore, and I found out he started on again. And he's not the only person. I know a lot of people that would smoke pot, and they just would have terrible memory patterns, or like connecting the dots. They wouldn't have good perception skills. And yet they still didn't see that as a problem. And like you said, unless they see it as a problem, you know, it affects the people around them.
because it makes it more difficult for them to make better decisions based on top of that, because they're losing some of their perceptive abilities. But unless they're seeing that as a problem, they're not going to do anything to do it. And it's such a mild drug, you know, so it doesn't turn you into a raving lunatic, you know, that they really don't see what's the big deal. It just mellows me out, that kind of thing. And they don't realize that more is going on. That mellowing out process is screwing with your brain activity.
Well, and again, that's the point. That's why I got on this segue, is because there's all kinds of things that we can fool ourselves about. Our health, our problems with our health, our ability to put our health in a better place, our disabilities to really hurt ourselves. And I think that analyzation of what you got going on for yourself is one of the hardest things we can do, to sit and really look at yourself and say, okay, you know, what am I doing wrong? I do it all the time, and it doesn't change a damn thing a lot of times. A lot of times I think to myself, okay, Renee, you can't do this anymore, because I know I shouldn't eat bread or sugar. I know I shouldn't, because I feel I love bread and sugar. I love my own carrot cakes. I love pancakes. I love all that stuff. I feel like crap after I eat them. While I'm eating them, I'm euphoria. But I feel like crap.
Yeah.
So do you suppose it stops me?
No.
No, it doesn't. So I understand the difficulty in making choices like this and giving up things that you think are making life more livable, life more exciting, life more fun for you. And
right.
Comforting always falls into that realm. Comfort is a big deal, especially once you get to be a grown-up and nobody can pick you up and put you on their lap anymore and let you know how much they care about you. So it becomes you look for that comfort in other areas, and of course that's why so many people get involved in drugs, alcohol, overeating, or anorexia and bulimia. They're because you see yourself in a whole other light, and
right.
your thought process goes all the way to the other side of that gambit. And
that's right.
And every time you look at yourself in the mirror, you, like, find yourself to be disgustingly too fat or too this or too that, and you struggle with all of that. So our mind and our attitude plays into everything we do. I enjoyed the second half, too, of the cancer discussion, which we had yesterday, and that was in regard to some of the things that are really, really bad for our body, as to how our body digests things, how it, how, matter of fact, I don't think I said this yesterday, but through the years at the Institute, there were a lot of children that came to us with cancer. And a lot of scenarios where the cancer was in their brain. And I remember one young boy, he was like 13, and they came from Europe someplace, I don't remember exactly where. And, of course, we all fell in love with them, and we were all doing everything we could to support him and everything. And one day he sat there looking at me, and I said, I was trying to get the chefs in the kitchen to make him quinoa or millet or something that he could have in the morning so that he felt like he was getting a good start on his day. 13-year-olds need breakfast. I mean, you know, they just need it. It's a part of how you bring them up from a baby. When you wake up a baby, you feed them. And so that was one of our hardest parts, was getting them through the morning hours without, without a big bowl of Captain Crunch or something like that. So I'm sitting with him, and we had made some, Kenny had made some fresh almond milk, and we put a little bit of cinnamon in the quinoa, and we did all kinds of stuff, and put a little bit of stevia in it, and he was eating, and he said, this is actually not too bad. It kind of tastes, you know, like Mapo or something like that. And I said, yeah. I said, so it's good, right? And I said, and it'll stick to your ribs. You won't feel hungry and everything until you get to have some green drink this morning at around 11. And he was like, okay. And then he looked at me and he says, does this mean I can never, ever have McDonald's again? And I remember looking at him thinking to myself, you know, see what's important to a 13-year-old? I can never, he's got a brain tumor. And the first thing he thinks of when he finally feels like he can trust somebody and looks at me and says, does this really mean I can never, ever have McDonald's again? And I...
Well, you know, that's part social than anything else. That's part where all his friends hang out.
Of course. Of course. And fitting in, not just the social aspect of going to McDonald's, but what kind of a kid goes to McDonald's and doesn't have a bag of French fries and a Coke?
Right. Right.
You know, it's just like you say, it's a social thing. It's about fitting in. So I looked at him and I said to him, you know what? Here's what I learned at my ripe old age. You shouldn't think about never ever, because never ever goes on for a long time. And making a promise to somebody about never ever is always a mistake.
Right.
And he looked at and he says, so you're telling me maybe sometime I could have French fries again? And I said, you never, ever know. You never, ever know. And if I told you you're never going to have McDonald's French fries again, that's going to really bother you. So why go there? Think about getting yourself in such a good place that, you know, if one day you're like craving McDonald's French fries so bad that you can't stand it, and you're in such a good place, you get to have some. He said, is that possible? And I said, anything's possible. But you see what's important, and because he was 13, it seemed like that was such a simple thing, but in essence, that's all of us.
That's right.
Because that's where we all go. You mean if I stay on a vegan diet, I can never, ever have a roast turkey dinner that I make for Thanksgiving. And or I can never, ever have pancakes again. Or I can never, ever, you know, you can't, sometimes that's just not where you need to go. It can't be about next month. It has to be about today.
Right. Right,
I used to counsel
a lot of the people who came there, because what you're saying is very, very true. A lot of the guests that came there that I had counseled, that was their issue. All right, that they could wrap their brain around coming to the Institute and going through a few week program, but then they're like, oh my God, I have to now do this for the rest of my life. And I would always answer it in the same way, very similarly to what you said. I said, well, first of all, I said, we don't know how you're going to respond to this. I said, so let's get through the first few weeks, see how you take to the lifestyle. You may adapt to it easier than you think. I said, but no, this is not like from here on out. Now, depending on the intensity of what you're battling is how intensively serious and strict you have to be. But at some point, as your body becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, then you can become a little less strict over time, so that maybe once in a while you can start returning to some of these things that were comfort food, so to speak. You know, I said, you can't look at it as all or nothing. I said, but take it in steps. Know that at some point you may be able to return a little bit to your old lifestyle, but also understand that as you develop forward with this, some of your old lifestyle you're not going to desire anymore, and that's a positive thing. I said, and allow that evolution to take place. Be comfortable with it. Let it unfold. Don't battle it, you know. And I said, and just have a comfort that as you move forward and get healthier and healthier, then you can kind of like be a little less strict. And that was my experience, and that was the experience of some of the other people. As they got healthier, they were able to back down a little bit. I never went back to eating meat. That was my personal choice. But I did get lax with some of the other things I had done that were so, so strict, and got a little bit more comfort food back in my diet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the important thing to realize about that is what we've already said in a million different ways, and that is that we're all different. And I've also had a lot of people talk to me about the I don't know who designed this, but you remember the people that came in and said, I have a B-type blood and I have a A-type blood, and it was all about some doctor who came up with the fact that some of us really need to have meat and some of us don't need to have meat and some of us function. Do you remember that program that somebody came and told us about?
Yeah, you know, eat for your blood type.
Yes, for your blood type.
And a lot of research came out about that book afterwards, that it's all the research that backed that book up was nonsense.
But people swallowed it in a lot of cases and believed that it was probably true because they were more, I had a person just say this to me the other day. Now that you're 65, aren't you worried that you don't get enough protein? And, of course, the protein is always the big thing with vegetarians and because you're not eating any red meat, and everybody grew up thinking that red meat is what gave you most of your protein. And
right.
A big discussion, and it will always be a big discussion because there are many, many schools of thought in regard to that. Personally, I believe that you don't need red meat. And in a perfect world, like I said to my husband the other day, I think if we were a wealthy family, I would not care if my family ate meat if they were not eating meat that was shot full of hormones. And I didn't know what the cattle was being fed and everything. If we could go to organic corn-fed meat and things like that and farm-raised fish and everything, it's a whole different story. And I believe
right.
eventually where we're all going to go because it just makes more sense to me. Because food is a big part of our life. But, again, all these things are about the decisions you make and the choices that you make, and they're up to you. They're not up to anybody else, but it is good to hear both sides of a story. And as the infamous Paul Harvey used to say, now you have the rest of the story. So,
yeah, I like that.
I think it's important to research thing when you search. Research anything you're going to do that's going to alter the lifestyle that you're accustomed to. And, again, that means you're a smart consumer, and it means that you understand a little bit about the changes you're going to make in your own lifestyle, which is can't be bad. There's no way that can be bad. So I want to wish everybody a great weekend. And I want to send some love and prayers out to my daughter-in-law, who for the third time got put back in the hospital last night.
Oh, boy.
And she is really, really struggling with everything that's going on, although she's in good frame of mind and, you know, she's handling everything. But, you know, when a doctor sends you home and says you're going to be fine twice and you're not, there's a little concern there and a little cause for worry. So everybody, please think about her today and send a few prayers and some positive energy her way. And, of course, to my son and my grandson because they're worried sick about mom. But I'm sure she's going to be okay, but we just have to make sure that the powers that be take care of her this time and don't send her on her way to let the chips fall where they may. So everybody have a great day. It looks like it's going to be a pretty nice one, and we are still looking for a bed and breakfast or a very, very large house that somebody would like to rent to us for a while to start a detox center. And a detox center that will answer a lot of problems for a lot of people with some very caring and knowledgeable people that will be involved with us. So, yeah, not really. if you find something that you think would be suitable in this area, we would like to not go any further north than Lake Okeechobee, and we really don't care anything about going too much further south as well. West Palm, Lake Okeechobee would be awesome if we could find a place that would house a new center that would be about supportive help for everybody and a detox center. So thanks, Shell, and God bless everybody. Talk to you Monday morning.
All right. Take care, Rainey. Have a good day, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Bye, babe.